Dip, 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 dip. Sha-la-la-la, sha-la-la-la, puddle. Sha-la-la-la, sha-la-la-la, puddle. Sha-la-la-la, sha-la-la-la, puddle. Sha-la-la-la, sha-la-la-la, puddle. Dip, 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 dip. Good evening. This is the Labor Exchange, and I'm Dennis Kreese, a member of the Boulder Area Labor Council, AFL-CIO. The subject of tonight's program is labor legislation, Colorado State Legislature, 2019. With us is a very special guest to address this subject, Kirsten Forsyth, Red Rock Strategies and Contract Lobbyist for the Colorado AFL-CIO. Kirsten, it's great to have you back here on the Labor Exchange at KGNU.
Thank you.
Kirsten, let's get into a couple background questions. How long have you been working as a contract lobbyist for the Colorado AFL-CIO?
So I've worked in different capacities for the AFL-CIO, but this is my third session working with the union.
And what previous experience beyond that did you have that made this position a quote-unquote good fit for you and subsequently all union workers and their families within the Colorado AFL-CIO?
I've been working in politics for about 22 years now, and I worked primarily on campaigns, but in 2012, I had the great honor of becoming John Morse's chief of staff. He was the president of the Senate for the 2013 legislative session. I stayed with him during the session and then worked with him as his consultant during the 13 recalls, doing the defense against the recalls. We obviously lost those just barely in Colorado Springs by a little under 300 votes. And then in 2014, started working for President Morgan Carroll, who is now the head of the Democratic Party, worked for her for 2 years, and decided I found a new home within the Capitol. I always thought that policy was not my forte, and it turns out that it I really did take a liking to it, and I really do enjoy it.
I'm just going to ask you, is it are you still a union member? And if so, which one?
Yes, I am a member of Smart Local 9. I'm a sheet metal worker.
All right.
They call me a materials handler.
No, they're a great union. And so for this KGNU listening audience, could you discuss your work and subsequent intensity monitoring labor legislation during this past 120-day session of the Colorado State Legislature 2019?
So how the intensity changed over the session?
Yes.
Yeah, it was. So at the very beginning of session, a huge number of bills are introduced, and it just requires a lot of reading for those first couple of weeks to try and understand which ones will impact what unions. We have over 120 affiliate unions, and those interests range from communications workers to service sectors workers, healthcare workers, obviously trades, plumbers, and pipe fitters. We have rail workers as well. So the interests are very diverse that I look at in terms of how I approach legislation and who it might impact. So the very beginning of session ends up being a little more intense and a little more difficult, but then it slows down a bit as we move into the budget. The budget, we can be a little slow, and then as soon as the budget passes, things just come flying out. And this year it was even worse than before because the session was actually earlier than normal and the budget landed in its typical week. So it felt like we had a lot less time to get things done. Some of our major pieces of legislation that we'd been working on didn't pass until the final 3 days of the session. So the last probably 10 days of the session were pretty rough, really long days. The Senate ended up working one night until 5:30 in the morning, and then came back at 7:30 in the morning to do appropriations hearings, and then get back on the floor at 9 o'clock. So it was a rough end of session, but overall very good.
How many other union political coordinators were assisting you in this ongoing massive effort?
In terms of the AFL as a whole, I have the executive director of the AFL, Dennis Doherty, certainly helps out where he can. Of course, he's got the job of actually running the rest of the AFL, not just the session. So he helps out as much as he possibly can. And then I do have affiliate union members that come in, business managers as well as executive directors of certain organizations, and just you know, rank and file union members that I have trained on the legislative process. And they come in and help both lobby as well as testify and can provide general support because sometimes I can't be there 100% of the time. So they can help back things up. But Smart Rail Transportation Division, Carl Smith, was very valuable this year and very helpful. The firefighters are always there every session, so they definitely help out. And I think more than anything, just having that other presence there and having that solidarity and support around the fights that we have is really, really great to have.
And well, just to finalize this, did you and or the Colorado AFL-CIO coordinate with other socially progressive pro-labor organization as well? And if so, just a couple examples.
I think one of the best examples was around local wage option, which allows for local municipalities and counties to increase their minimum wage above the constitutional minimum wage of $12 an hour. We worked with a bunch of different community groups, COPA being the lead organization on that. Colorado People's Alliance is who that group is. They were the lead organization in that, but there were a bunch of different organizations involved in that. Obviously, SEIU was invested in it. And so working in a larger coalition, we're able to get a lot more done and really fight against, truthfully, corporate interests that are pretty prevalent in the Capitol. Very overwhelming, actually.
Well, Kirsten, let's get into the content of the show, labor legislation, Colorado State Legislature 2019. So I have down here, got it broken up into two groups, but first we'll go with the first group, 2019 State Senate bills. So could you give an update and final outcome on the final State Senate bills that the Colorado AFL-CIO followed? And I have Senate Bill 196, Prevailing Wage in Public Projects, Senate Bill 85, Equal Pay for Equal Work Act, Senate Bill 156, State Electrical Board Authorization, and Senate Bill 171, Apprenticeships and Vocational Technical Training, and Senate Bill 238, Improved Wages and Accountability, Home Care Workers.
Right.
So go ahead.
So Senate Bill 196 was one of our greatest accomplishments this session. It actually ended up establishing prevailing wage for public projects over $1 million in the procurement process. And prevailing wage is basically where the Department of Labor sets the wage that is average in the area for wages and benefits averaged together. And that sets the base for any sort of contract that you end up submitting. What prevailing wage does is prevent companies from being able to underbid by doing that on the backs of their labor. So paying them less in order to get more profit onto the project. So it provides a level playing field for people who are paying their employees well, and then they have to figure out if they want to bid lower, how they're going to cut costs in other areas. But doing it through labor is certainly something we don't support. It also provides an opportunity for highly skilled trades to more competitively bid in some of those contracts.
Senate Bill 85, Equal Pay for Equal Work.
Equal Pay for Equal Work. This is a great bill. Senator Jessie Danielson ran this bill this year. She was a wonderful champion of it, started in the Senate this year. It started off a little rough, hitting some difficult areas, particularly with industry fighting it. There were a few amendments that were added in the bill in order to accommodate some of their concerns. But overall, what the bill does is it basically says that if you are if you have experienced discrimination in the workplace as a woman and or a protected class, that you can action against that company in order to get those wages back. So in addition to filing a civil rights complaint, you can do a civil action in court. And the intention here is to force companies to really come up with a way in which they are actually promoting people. So they need to do it by, for example, by a merit system or a seniority system. They can't be doing it by personality or the fact that, they go out every night for beers or, this person hangs out with me after work and this woman goes home to her children and therefore he gets the promotion and she doesn't. So it allows for very clear objective standards that are required in order for companies to give promotions and or put job requirements into the field. So I think it's a a great bill. It was really exceptional work on her behalf. So
great. And you can just briefly describe, you know, like the last three, Senate Bill 156, State Electrical Board Reauthorization, and Senate Bill 171, Apprenticeships and Vocational Technical Training.
Yeah. So the Electrical Board bill sounds kind of boring, but essentially what it did is it provided higher standards for individuals installing solar panels. So this shows up in a couple of different bills that we worked on this year. But the intention here is to ensure that we do not have lower standards for individuals who are installing renewable energy, and therefore you're forcing more of the skilled trades out that are coming out of the electrical field, which are typically in the utilities.
And it provides for a journeyman electrician to be on a board, and that would be like somebody from IB68.
Yes, absolutely. So better representation.
So yeah. The apprenticeships and vocational technical training.
Yeah, so that one is it's actually a directory that lists all apprenticeships and vocational training in the state, requires them to include their graduation requirements, when people should be finishing their actual program, so that we don't have eternal apprenticeships, which some companies will actually do to take advantage of labor and keep classifying somebody as an apprentice for a decade or more. And that way they can save money on labor costs again. So this one is intended to really point out the differences in the quality of the apprenticeship programs, in addition to showing how much they get hired after they finish the apprenticeship, and then how much they get paid.
And this one here, I like this, that the last one, improve wages and accountability for home care workers.
Yeah.
And that passed and was signed by the governor, too.
Yes, yes. So that one just increases wages of home care workers. It is a first step. And SEIU worked really hard with their home care worker division in order to get that bill passed. So
all the bills I talked about were all passed and signed by the governor.
Yep.
All right, then. Now let's go into the 2019 State House bills. Mm-hmm. So as before, could you give an update and final outcome on the following state house bills that the Colorado AFL-CIO followed? And, you know, this is great, the first one, House Bill 1025, ban in the box. And then House Bill 1034, two-person crew on freight trains. It might confuse little people, but you can explain that.
Yep.
House Bill 1086, the plumbing inspections ensure compliance. And I think this is a big one, House Bill 1210, local wage option, local government minimum wage. And House Bill 1217, paralocal government division member contribution rate. And then House Bill 1314, just transition for coal-based economy. And we're going to talk about that later on in the interview, too. So go ahead.
Great. So 1210 is the ban the box legislation. This is a bill that the unions heavily supported, predominantly, again, for that level.
That ban the box is 1025.
Oh, 1025, sorry. That one provided an opportunity for individuals to apply for a job without having to disclose on the application itself that they had a criminal history. The person, the company can still run a background check after they have accepted that application and they have, interviewed the person, or they've decided to offer the job. They can still run a background check after that. But what this does is provide an opportunity for people to at least get a foot in the door. So many of them, they just put in the application and then they're once they indicate that they have a felony on their record, their application is thrown out, regardless of whether or not the felony has anything to do with the job that they are applying for. So the intention is to provide a better pathway out of prison and people to get to work. This is what prevents recidivism, and we need to continue to do more things for criminal justice.
In House Bill 1034, two-person crew on freight trains, what's that all about? But that's actually really important.
Yes, it is. So this is the Smart Transportation Division, sheet metal, air, rail, and transportation part of the union. Believe it or not, these freight trains can be over a mile long. And right now in the state of Colorado, and actually nationally, there are no minimum requirements on how many crew members need to be on that train. So literally what can happen is BNSF tomorrow can decide that they only want one person on that train. And that's it. So if there's any sort of accident that ends up happening along the way, that crew member is required by federal law to stay with that train. So say it hits a car, say somebody gets run over by the train, which happens sometimes, they, you know, hit a person and they lose a leg or something, that crew member can't get out and assist or do anything to check on the actual train itself because they can't leave the engine itself in order to assist anything else. So having a second person on that train is very important for Colorado's public safety. So and, great bill.
Plumbing inspections ensure compliance, and I think that's really important.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. So the plan here was to increase requirements in terms of how plumbing inspections were actually happening through cities and counties. So that bill ended up being compromised a little bit on to help out with cities and counties and doing a phase-in on it. But overall, the bill ended up being in a good place. We were really pleased.
Well, this is a big one here, and I know you worked in a lot of AFL-CIO and a lot of unions in it. It's the local wage option, local mm-hmm. government minimum wage.
Yeah, that one's $12.10. Yeah, that one definitely provides an opportunity to increase wages in areas like Boulder, Denver, Aurora, where you've got the cost of living just exploding.
The ski areas.
Ski areas, yes, Vail and Aspen. I mean, can you imagine trying to live off of $12 an hour in Aspen? It's just awful. So this provides an opportunity for municipalities and counties to increase their minimum wage to meet the local demand in terms of wages.
And it's an option. It's not mandatory.
Right.
So the thing is, it'll be up to their governing body, city council, so on and so forth, to make that decision.
Yep.
And the paralocal government division member contribution rate, a couple months ago, based on some about 230 days of substitute teaching, I found out that, you know, I get an annuity every month now. It's only like $48, but I'm like, wow, you know, I got something for all that time.
Yeah.
So go ahead with that one.
It's just an increase in the overall contribution rate, both by the employer and the employee, to meet some of the stipulations from last year's bill around PARA, but also to ensure that there's a base minimum for cities and counties that they are contributing into PARA, so they can't go below 3%.
And this one, you just, we'll see if we have enough time to talk about it, but mm-hmm. the House Bill 1314, just transition for a coal-based economy.
Yep. So this year was heavily energy dominated. We saw a lot of work around reducing carbon emissions in the state of Colorado, which of course the AFL supports that mission overall. The issue is around how we do that transition and ensure that as we make that transition, that people aren't being left behind and they're not losing their jobs. So we have people working currently for the utilities. Xcel would be a good example of people working inside those coal-fired power plants that as we shut those down, they're losing their jobs. And in some places in the state, like Craig and Hayden, that could just devastate their economy.
Absolutely. Rout County has a lot of United Mine Workers, coal workers, and down south as well.
Yes.
So let's move into this, Kirsten. Colorado legislature. And how did the political climate, in all these bills we talked about passed and were signed by the governor.
Yep.
But the Colorado legislature, how did the political climate at the state capitol benefit organized labor, all working people, with the outcomes of the 2018 election? And you know where I'm going with this. State Senate, mm-hmm. I think it's 20 Democrats, 15 Republicans. State House, 40 Democrats and 25 Republicans. Mm-hmm. So you had a better climate.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference. And the one thing we did see this year as well is some new rising champions that came into the legislature. So obviously Tom Sullivan is a wonderful champion. We couldn't be happier to have him in the legislature. He is a postal worker, union member. And so having individuals like him really matters intensely. Individuals such as Jessie Danielson, who got elected into the Senate, she was a wonderful champion for labor this year. Couldn't thank her enough. Danaya Escar from down in Pueblo, she's been a great champion. And then obviously Leroy Garcia, who hails from Pueblo and is very close with the union, has always been a great advocate. So those are just some of the examples. Obviously, I can't list them all, but we really had some wonderful champions this year, and having the political environment with holding both the House, the Senate, and the governor's seat in order to pass pro-worker legislation was delightful.
That's great. So, but, you know, what tactics did the Republican opposition utilize to stop and or slow the progress of labor-friendly legislation? And at the end, how critical was the support of Governor Jared Polis?
The Republicans have actually been really smart this year, and it was actually coming more from the business lobby, where they were looking more at not doing direct opposition to bills because they knew they couldn't stop them. So they focused predominantly on amending. And in some cases, too many amendments can end up killing the intent of the legislation. And I think we saw a lot of that happening around family in particular, where it kept being amended. There was even a point where there was a proposed strike below. The policy ended up just becoming more complicated and people trying to absorb it. And so then that cause business to come up even more and say, oh, well, now we have a problem with this, this, and this. So definitely amendment strategy seemed to be their best tactic this year, and it really helped them drive home questions about policy as a whole and keep people off of their mission of, you know, helping working families. So that was difficult to deal with, and we did see that definitely hurt us with family this year. And there's going to be a study this summer, and hopefully they come back with it next year better and ready to get it through.
All right. And Kirsten, as before, could you discuss and give an update of the following state house bills and what was their final outcome? There's just two. House Bill 1267, which, you know, I think is great, wage theft criminal penalties. And then House Bill 1306, call center job loss data. And I know CWA would loves this.
Yes, I love that bill. We'll start with the last one. The call center job loss bill provides that the Department of Labor will actually track where there are jobs going overseas. So the intention here is that we are ensuring, as companies are shipping more jobs overseas, that we are not going to provide them any sort of tax breaks or tax credits in the state. So this is one of the first steps. It does not take that second step in terms of restricting whether or not those companies can receive tax credits or benefits from the state. We hope to be able to layer that on after we get the actual data. And then the second,
wage theft.
The very first one, wage theft. It's a great bill. It was actually the Carpenters who were the lead on this bill, and they ended up working with the Human Trafficking Coalition and Boulder District Attorney's Office to ensure that if the wage theft happens, that it becomes a felony. So you put it basically in the category of theft. So anytime an employer is withholding wages for a certain amount of time, they consider that theft. And so the person can be prosecuted as an actual criminal, which is
great.
Yeah,
I got a history of that from being an organizer in that, and I got someone, convicted, him and his wife, and that was back in the late 80s. And they got probation, but they had to pay back all the money because they just cheated a lot. It was a drywall, and that's where the Carpenters were coming from, too.
Yeah.
And so let's move on to this, the Beyond the Just Transition State House bill. You wanted to highlight bills about energy and their impact on all working people and all citizens in the state of Colorado. So could you discuss, update with these two pieces of legislation and any others?
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a whole lot of time, but I only put two down here. Senate Bill 181, Protect Public Welfare Oil and Gas Operations, and House Bill 1313, Reduction in Carbon Emissions by Qualifying Retail Utilities.
So Senate Bill 181 was, of course, the bill around oil and gas emissions. One of the things you'll notice with with any bill that works to try and reduce emissions and tighten up environmental requirements, that labor can actually benefit from that. So as we're checking pipelines to ensure that there aren't any leaks, hopefully they're using union labor in that. And so we put some requirements in there in terms of ensuring that they are using good quality individuals to do that. That way they're insured a good quality product and less leakage, whether that be the actual product itself, oil and gas leaks into the air or soil. So that bill, I think we're going to see how it works out over this next year to see how they end up employing quality labor in the oil and gas fields and see if we can't benefit.
Yeah, it's controversial, and contrary to what, you know, the opposition was to that, you know, they're not going to lose any jobs.
Right.
Because the last time there was something similar to this, I don't know, about 5-10 years ago, they actually increased their workforce in Colorado, primarily in Weld County, by 400%. And Casey Becker, you know, my state representative in the you know, the Speaker of the House, you know, mentioned that to him, and she didn't get a whole lot of feedback on that, you know, because she definitely does her homework, that woman, believe me. Kirsten, we got about 4 minutes left, but let's get on this real quick. Family Leave Act legislation, this much needed legislation, especially for working mothers, was postponed, delayed until the next session in 2020. What are some of the financial issues and business concerns with this legislation?
So there were a couple of business concerns that ended up coming up. One was around the size of companies that are impacted by the legislation. So there was concern if you have a 5-person operation and if you have one person go out on 12 weeks leave, how does that company end up accommodating for that? There was discussion around working with workforce centers and ensuring that there could be replacement labor. That didn't seem to appease many of the companies, and they really struggled with that in particular. I think there were some other larger companies that were saying that they had benefits that were higher than where family medical leave insurance was, and that this would encourage them to eliminate their plans and stick with family. Although those are very few and far between, they certainly were loud enough to cast doubt in people's minds. The legislation as a whole is meant to impact, you know, companies across the board, which most of them do not offer a family medical leave policy. And that's where this legislation is meant to touch. And so I think they do have the opportunity this summer to really rework this and come up with some good ideas in order to address those concerns as well as get it through.
And get all the dollar signs in place.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, because it's a fiscal note, and I know that had a, you know, and I think they can do that.
Yeah.
You know, it might not be as generous as one, you know, intended it to be, but if you get something in place, then, you know, in the future you can build on it.
Right.
Kirsten, ballot measures, November 2019 election. How will the ballot measures enacted by House Bill 1257 and 1258, debruising for education and transportation, impact public sector workers and private sector workers if passed in the November 2019 election?
So a couple of things here is one, there's discussions about doing a special session in order to essentially beef up this ballot measure, which is Proposition CC. The discussion there is around doing potentially a compromise around doing an income tax reduction, but also retaining the revenues above the Tabor cap, which will equate to about $500 million this year. The propositions as they are written now will definitely benefit transportation and education. If they can come together in a special session and come up with a compromise, it could actually benefit more.
Great. Kirsten, you did a great job. And, you know, the thing is that when someone's doing a great job, I get frustrated because I don't have more time. And that's that's the case with this, what's going on right now. But thank you for being on Labor Exchange at KGNU. And for those of you who join us even later, the subject of tonight's program was labor legislation, Colorado State Legislature 2019. And with us, a very special guest, as before, Kirsten Forsyth, Red Rock Strategies and Contract Lobbyist for the Colorado AFL-CIO. If you have any comments about this show or any other show on KGNU, please call 303-447-9911. And next week, Monday, July 15, 2019, please listen to La Lucha Sigue at 6 p.m. This has been the Labor Exchange, and I'm Dennis Kreese for KGNU Community Radio.